Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I mentioned yesterday that when I schedule a guest, I'm never certain what events will be taking place that may be of special concern to the guest I have on. It certainly was true on Friday. It absolutely is true again today. We have the Middle East literally erupting like crazy. We discussed it yesterday. The region seems to be a perpetual tinderbox. We know what's going on in Syria. Now we have the Egypt situation. What's next? Anyway, Rodney Shakespeare is my guest today. He's on these issues and others all the time. He's been on this program many times before. His comments are very, very incisive, and I always look forward to what he has to say. Rodney, welcome. Indeed, I do look forward to your comments. I just can't imagine every time I check a news report, I imagine that maybe what I have written, maybe the previous day or maybe what I'm writing presently, I may have to revise because events are moving faster than the way I can discuss them.
Yes, Steve, events are moving with extraordinary rapidity, and as you say, particularly in the Middle East. We can't avoid the subject of Egypt, but what's going on there is much wider. An aspect which is not really touched on in commentary is why it is that the Middle Eastern countries don't seem able to really break free and establish themselves as independent nations. I've been reading your article on Egypt, and I've been reading one by Michel Chasudowski, the American economist, on Egypt, and both of them are pointing to the neoliberal economic control as exercised via the International Monetary Fund and Christine Lagarde. As you know, I think it was $5 billion that was borrowed. And with those dollars came the conditionalities, and those conditionalities essentially smashed a large percentage of the Egyptian population. Another step down into poverty, and half of those are on about $3 a day. And when they get the inflation and they've lost a meal, then no wonder that they, whatever the issues are for the middle classes, there are a lot of poor people out there in great difficulty. And that was the situation at the start of the Arab Spring. And the IMF has successfully precipitated another round of trouble in Egypt, I think, essentially, by those economic problems. But for me, the extraordinary situation about this is that though some people are saying, and you are saying, Steve, that you thought that the USA, via its control of the Egyptian army, puts out $1.5 billion each year straight into the pockets of the Egyptian generals, that you feel that this was totally an American thing. I'm not so sure about this. I think more of it, it's a result of a muddle of American policy, and the contradictions are coming home. For example, Morsi suddenly played the vicious sectarian card and decided to ally not just with the throat slitters and gas chokers and head choppers of Syria, but essentially with a total war against a third or more of the Islamic population, against the Shia. Now, when that happened, you're saying, oh, yes, now what is all this about? Well, it's about American policy deciding to ally itself with the Saudis more openly in a vicious attack theory sectarianism. But now look what is happening in Turkey, as I mentioned with you a month ago. On May the 16th, it was being said in the universities that there would be a great revolt against Erdogan, precipitated by his extraordinary policy to become totally and viciously sectarian with an intervention in Syria, which in the long run actually puts the whole Middle East into permanent civil war. Now, Morsi did that. At the same time, Morsi denied what is without any doubt the desire of the Egyptian street for some sort of justice in Palestine. Now, those two policies, those are Zionist-controlled American policies. So I'm far from certain that all of this was a sort of a direct result of the USA saying, well, we just do this for fun. I think a large factor was that it was precipitated by the economic stresses of the IMF, and that, of course, is the USA and the UK and the Zionists behind this. But they have kicked out a man who was solidly and surprisingly supporting the Zionist policy against the Palestinians, and a man who was basically, I think, following what in the long term must be a disastrous and unwise American policy. So, yes, the Americans behind this via the army, but they've not really decided what it is they want. They are probably hoping to put in another puppet. It could be just military rule. I mean, they don't have to believe a word that the army says. And my view is that supposing you get somebody else elected in, my advice to the Muslim Brotherhood would be to stop fighting and immediately organize themselves and take the Egyptian generals at their word and say, all right, there's going to be another election and we will do well in the next election. That would be my advice to the Muslim Brotherhood. But when you look at then who is going to be elected, you then see a big problem, which is there is nobody, certainly not Morsi in the Muslim Brotherhood, there is nobody in Egyptian politics who can touch on what is the key issue, the issue by which you ensure that Islamic nations, the Arab Islamic nations, immediately start becoming independent nations able to control their own destiny. The need is for a leader to stand up and say, we will fight the Western system and we will have our own independent bank. He will put his life on the line in saying that. I do know that, Steve. But all the time, unless you come out with an independent bank, there is no hope that you'll be able to avoid the maneuvering and manipulations which effectively put the West back in control. So I'm just going to stop there by saying that the real issue is whether an Egyptian leader can come forward. I have little faith in al-Baradei, for example.
Rodney, I fully agree with everything that you say. The point I made in a couple of articles was, I believe that Washington chose Morsi to be its man in Cairo, and they backed him, and his election was less than lily pure. There were lots of problems with his election, and Egypt's Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, SCAF, S-C-A-F, really holds rules Egypt with an iron hand, but it's very tight with the Pentagon. That's long-standing stuff. So you have this General Tantawi under Mubarak, and he stayed on after Mubarak was deposed, and now you've got this guy al-Sisi. He's the head general, and he's very tight with the Pentagon and Chuck Hagel and the generals in Washington, and pretty much they plan policy together. I think the public anger against Morsi made him damaged goods in the eyes of Washington. The majority of Egyptians, the points that you bring out, the neoliberal harshness that's caused such immense harm to the vast majority of Egyptian people. I mean, they're practically starving. They don't earn enough money to live on. They can't feed their families properly. They don't get any kind of benefits. And what they may be eroding even further. There's deep corruption in the country. All of the problems that they were rebelled against Mubarak are worse now than they were under Mubarak. And Morsi can say, well, you know, I inherited a rotten system. Well, if he didn't want the job, he shouldn't have taken it. That's my feeling. The buck stops with him, and he's Washington's man. He was Washington's man in Cairo, but because of this immense public anger, I think Washington decided it was best to cut its losses and get somebody else in. This al-Baradei is another wolf in sheep's clothing. He's an establishment guy, just like this guy Mansour, the Supreme Court Chief Justice in Egypt, that was appointed interim president. So it looks like al-Baradei has already been picked, but there's an official announcement supposedly coming today, and I'm waiting for it. But I expect nothing good from him. They're going to follow Washington's rules. I'm convinced of it. I mean, $1.5 billion a year alone depends on it, and I agree with you. Rodney, wouldn't it be wonderful if there was a Hugo Chavez in the Middle East?
That's what you want, a Hugo Chavez. Going back just a little bit, there's a point which is forgotten as regards Morsi's election, which was that the generals under Tantawi maneuvered things and stopped probably the politically more able candidate, whose name I think is Shaker, who's just been arrested, by the way. They stopped him being the candidate, so effectively that the Muslim Brotherhood, which had decided to keep out of politics, goes into politics with a second-rate or a third-rate candidate. And that could well be that the soldiers were therefore plotting a combination of things which would lead to the present situation. And in that situation, and they would come claiming to be white knights saving everybody. And the only thing which is spoils that view at the moment is quite simply that they appear to be committed to having some sort of election, even if it's a fiddled election, whereas probably their deep desire is to simply to go back and go back to a sort of Mubarak type of view. But I want to say this, is that there is a problem now for the army, is that if they do decide that they are going to keep power and there isn't going to be some form of reasonable election, then they're probably going to find that the whole Egyptian population is up against them. So in one sense, the situation hasn't completely sort of come to an end. In practical terms, my guess is there's going to be an election, and it's going to be a figure who will serve Western interests. And though there, you know, one just says, would al-Baradei, for example, will he be so weak that he maintains the policy against Palestine and that he maintains the heavily sectarian policy? I think that one of the things in the Turkish uprising was discussed at the sectarianism. And I think that one of the things against Morsi was the sheer disgust against his patent sectarianism, and that amongst the, shall we say, amongst the informed middle classes, will probably be the one thing about, you know, they were looking at in absolute disgust. So the situation, for me, isn't sort of over. And what is really missing, though, is a clear idea of how to go forward in modern circumstances in the Middle East. And all you get at the moment is, best you get a revolution, and then you find either those who come next are manipulated, this is the present scene, or simply they don't really know what to do. But another phase of the what's called the Arab Spring or Islamic Awakening, whatever you call it, is in the offing. And it's probably going to be in the offing because, it's starting to start possibly in Tunisia. They're thinking of having the equivalent. But the real tragedy is that there's no clear idea. I mean, you're standing up and saying that you're for Islam, you're for Islam, you're for Islam, and then you put the clock back in political terms, or if you put the clock back into what modern people won't accept, a vicious, very often anti-women, negative and destructive tack theory, let's kill everybody else type of situation. Modern people do not want that. And there are, believe you me, there are a lot of modern people in the Middle East who understand that. Their problem is that they don't know how to break free from Western control. And at the center of that is the Western control over the banking system.
Oh, indeed so. And the banking system really cuts to the heart of all of these problems. I agree again so fully with you on that, Rodney. I mean, this money control with the IMF and the World Bank and the other international lending agencies, and they literally rob people of their meager resources. They are rich people who already have too much, and ordinary people suffer so deeply. And these problems never end. They just keep getting worse and worse. So the term I like is neoliberal harshness. It comes in so many ways, but the core of it is the power of the bankers to literally rip continued pounds of flesh from ordinary people, impoverish them more deeply than they are already, cause enormous harm, and we see the results. We got an eruption against Mubarak. It was economic social issues that caused that eruption mainly. I mean, if people don't earn enough to feed their families and pay their rent and take care of basics, sooner or later they're going to erupt. They did against Mubarak, and they unfortunately did. Their grievances were real. They didn't oust him. It was really a plot from Washington to oust him at that point, because even though he largely supported Washington's policies, Rodney, he did not support key things. He was against the war on Iraq. He was a little bit too friendly with Iran, a few other things, and that made him damaged goods. But, of course, he lasted 30 years. Morsi lasted a year at the most, and now he's gone. He's under house arrest, supposedly. And I expect a lot more blood in the streets. I mean, it was vicious Friday and overnight. I think things calmed down Saturday morning, but I can't believe this is over. I think this is going to continue for a while.
Oh, no, there'll be blood in the streets. But as I indicated just now, my feeling is that it would be better for the Muslim Brotherhood sort of side of things not to put blood on the streets, but immediately to go for increasing their political organization. I don't actually think that their position to win an election is all that strong, because without any doubt they were thrown out. But then you have to look at it from the other point of view, is who will be in a position to actually win the election. And Egyptian politics is riven by faction, and people are all over the place. Steve, just another point just there, one last point on this, which is what is happening here. Without any doubt, it has a parallel in Turkey. The Turkish government has conceded that they're not going to destroy that wonderful park in the center of Istanbul. And they've said, we're not going to do that. And that was the apparent precipitating cause of the trouble. But the real cause was a combination of absolute disgust in the middle classes with Turkey's Syrian factional Takfiri type policy, and plus, of course, the usual one, the stress of the economics. And I think that those factors are still going to go on right the way through the Middle East. So this story is not over. Steve, can we briefly turn to Syria? And then
we've
got to deal with other matters.
Oh, absolutely. Syria is so important, Rodney. I look forward to your comments on that.
Well, in Syria, I mean, really, you're looking at what looks like civil war in the amount of destruction which is being done on both sides. And it's very, very clear that in military terms, if the West puts in more arms, there's just going to be any more destruction. If there was a vote taken, the view of commentators is that Assad would win this. Now, I want to remind listeners that, was it 2 years ago? Or no, less than that ago. First of all, there was a vote, a referendum vote, which was won by the government. And secondly, there was then a type of election. Now, you and I can go and argue about who was fiddling what, etc., etc. But this idea that the government is politically in a weak position is a great mistake. And the view at the moment is that given the amount of destruction and the terrible pain and misery being inflicted by this this whatever you call it, this military war or whatever, is that to get peace and quiet, people would definitely vote for the government, because the alternative is quite shocking. An extreme form of Sharia is being imposed in those areas upon which the rebels have control. I mean, you have to remember that when it comes down to viciousness, and fighting. The Sharia Takfiri rebels not only are ferocious opponents, but they turn on their own side. They have no reason not to. And as soon as they get control, they implement no music, no makeup for the women, no jobs for the women, you name it, all that sort of stuff. Now, I don't think that that is a long-term vision for the Middle East. It survives because, you see, it is in a very, very sharp contrast to what is the Western way of controlling. And its own way, it has a sort of a counter vision. But the other night, Steve, I was at a meeting in which we were discussing whether Islam does actually have an economic vision. And here, everyone was agreed that Islamic economics and finance is a fraud. It is only a version of modern banking. It goes for the rich to go out and they're able to batten onto the situation and particularly onto the poor for their advantage, and they have no intent of spreading the real economy or wealth to anybody else. Everybody agreed with that. The interesting thing then came with the discussion of what you might call Sharia economics. And of course they took a hard line on, say, basic gold, because they don't like money being created out of nothing. But then I went for them on just two or three issues. I said, well, first of all, if you just have gold, that doesn't mean to say you'll get rid of interest. Those who have the gold will screw everybody else with big sums of interest. That shocked them. And they said, oh, no, that wouldn't be Islamic. So I say, well, yes, well, how are you going to stop it? They said, we'll pass a law. I say, well, maybe you would and maybe you wouldn't. But you wouldn't then get the money actually being lent unless people can take their screw. That's the trouble with gold. And the other thing is, I said, is that Sharia economics has absolutely no understanding of how to spread productive capacity throughout the population. It depends on the concept of zakah. Zakah is what existed in Islam. It is basically a sort of wealth tax for charity. It mitigates poverty, but it is no structural solution. So there you are. You have this problem in all of this, is that you get a vicious you get a strong political and religious view of what is the way forward. The only trouble is that particular view has no appeal to modern people. The free market, the quote, says basically that everything is efficient, all outcomes are just, Klingon, everything will be all right. You then look at socialism. It also has an appeal. It says it's appeal to justice and that there'll be wealth, etc., for people. Both of those talk about economics, and whether they are lying their heads off or not, they have an appeal to a sense of fairness, and they deal with economics. The trouble with Sharia economics is that it talks of justice, but it has no resonance to a modern economic sense. When you hear what they say, you don't really believe that there's going to be some sort of economics which comes out of it. When you hear what they say, you certainly don't believe there'll be anything sense of economic fairness. At best, you will get a charity which does not work in practice. And that is why what's called Islamic economics or Sharia economics ultimately is no damn good for a modern society. It's not about question whether it works or not. It just simply does not appeal to modern people. So instead, you get this extraordinary authoritarian appeal to politics and to religion, which ends up taking an extreme view and killing anybody who it disagrees with. Now, I say all that, Steve, because you see the type of problem which Islam has when it opposes the West. The Sharia economics is not something by which you can have appeal with sufficient people so you can put up something to oppose the West. At best, that appeal leads you into a cul-de-sac of extreme violence and hatred of everybody else. Okay, well, Syria, it looks like the government is winning. Are winning very much on the ground, and they would certainly win politically if there was an election or a referendum or something now.
There's no question about it. In an article I wrote probably two or three weeks ago, there was a NATO poll, of all things, a private organization that conducted
it. What was it you said? A NATO poll.
A NATO-conducted poll. Ah. They enlisted a private organization, and this was maybe around mid-June, maybe earlier in June. It
really?
Showed 70% of Syrians support Assad. Now, can you imagine NATO saying something like that? If NATO said 70%, it's probably more like 80 or 90%.
Well, I didn't know that, but that's very, very interesting indeed. And it does tell you of some of the realities. It also, Steve, the point which is so difficult to get across, is I do believe that American policy and Western policy is now, it's not just a question of being self-contradictory. It's a sort of, it is fractured and cracked, and all the parts are all contradicting itself. And it's utterly preposterous. I mean, there is no now coherent American policy. They're getting away with it because others haven't got something by which to put an alternative. But American policy, look what it supports. It supports Saudi Arabia. It supports the killer Khalifas in Bahrain. So you've got America claiming to be support free speech and democracy, but whereas the reality is, you know, it's supporting all these. And if you just let me just see just here, yes, here we got something. It is suppressing free speech. All Iranian TV and radio channels are now being shut down as a result of America. Now, Steve, it's not just one channel. And I've seen the word dozens. I happen to know there's at least 10 or 12 television channels from Iran. All of them are being shut down. Now, this is American policy. And the question is, excuse me, what is going on? Americans is suppressing free speech. We'll come back to spying later on. But you see the point there. Their policy is all over the place. Then they are arming the throat slitters, head choppers, and gas choppers. While at the same time, Al-Qaeda, essentially, America claims that these people did 9/11. You can't have it both ways. Either they did 9/11, because we know they didn't. It's essentially, it was Mossad and some sections inside America. Then the USA is still collapsed with its batch of lies about 9/11, but all the intelligence service knows that it was a lie. The USA is lecturing everybody on human rights by maintaining Guantanamo. It's inducing a permanent state of fear in its population. It's continuing its wars. It's a vicious drone assassin. And by the way, on that, it looks at last that Pakistan is starting to show a little more courage. The trouble about Pakistan, you have the most corrupt ruling class that you can conceive of. And they made an agreement with the Americans to let America put drones in. And so on the one hand, the politicians go through the motions of complaining about it. On the other hand, they have made an agreement that America may strike down anybody that it wants to. The Pakistani Air Force has airplanes. They can identify the drones and shut them and knock them down in 20 minutes. There's only one Pakistani politician with integrity, and he is a UK, a man who did splendidly in cricket in the UK, that's Imran Khan. The USA is supporting the most anti-democratic regimes in the world. And why is all this happening? Because it's controlled by Zionism. And Steve, all of this gets down to, believe it or not, it really gets down to Zionism. Just think how all these issues would start to resolve themselves and the tension would disappear if the USA just stood up and said, well, we're going to try and have tolerant democracies in the Middle East, and they won't be controlled by us, and we will try and be with them all on reasonable terms. But instead, the USA is supporting viciousness, attacks, tiny, cliquish, plutocratic regimes, and even when the democracy comes along, it still insists ultimately that the population should be controlled by the West. The problem is the USA cannot let go, and whilst it cannot let go, it is going to find that the rest of the world is quietly and not so quietly going to go in the different direction. And as it does so, there will come a time when suddenly the USA will wake up and find that no one wants to know it. And Steve, I think perhaps after the break that this will be a matter which we can follow up in a little more detail.
Oh, absolutely, Roddy. We will take a break momentarily now. And I agree with you again on what you said, including on Pakistan. It has a totally corrupt government. It has a new prime minister. He's a former prime minister, Nawaz Sharif. He's in a pocket of Washington. The government complains about these drone strikes killing people. On the other hand, silently in back rooms, it says, we don't give a damn. Kill as many as you want. You know, we need to give red meat to the Pakistanis. And I agree with you on Zionism. I've quoted Edward Said a number of times saying things like, the power of the Israeli lobby in America, it can marshal the entire U.S. Senate in a matter of hours to come together to support Israel on virtually anything. And yes, it's almost that true in the House. There may be a handful of people who go another way, but they're too few to matter. So basically what Israel wants, it gets, and it's causing so much trouble in the Middle East and beyond. We'll break. We'll come right back. Welcome back on with Rodney Shakespeare, discussing events in the Middle East and Syria, or beyond the Middle East and Central Asia, Pakistan just now, certainly what's going on in Egypt. Rodney, I just checked the Press TV website. By the way, I wrote about the war controlling. I wrote an article on targeting Press TV and other Iranian news services, radio and television. I put my article up briefly a couple of days ago, and I more widely distributed it yesterday. It's on my website. I call it Controlling the Message, Targeting Press TV. I feature Press TV, but I mention all of the satellite services targeting Press TV. And of course, the issue is controlling the message, suppressing truth. Press TV is wonderful. They have you on often. They have me on often. People can listen or watch Press TV. They can do it online, and they can find out what's going on. They certainly can't do it watching American TV. They'll get distorted reports from the BBC, the CBC in Canada, across other media across Western Europe, but you get the truth on Press TV. Why on earth would they have people like you and me on, Rodney, to speak freely if they didn't want people to know what's really going on? And nobody pays us to say anything. We're free agents and we do it. One more comment, then I'll let you jump back in. I checked Press TV's website. They've got a story now on Turkish police headline. Turkish police fire tear gas at protesters in Istanbul. That very much is ongoing.
Yes, indeed, the Turkish thing, and it's going to continue for the reasons we've discussed. Now, on the shutting down of Press TV, I did mention that I know of about 10 TV channels in that area, but I've been told that it's actually dozens. There are some of them which are pretty obscure. So this is a blatant suppression of free speech. As regards what goes on those channels, you get the truth. Nobody has ever told me what to say, with the one exception. And prior to a discussion program, I said, well, how long can I speak? And they said, 2 minutes, then shut your mouth. A very good rule, Steve, which you recognize, and I notice that you do. Can I congratulate you? When you do your articles, they are laid out in a way which makes for very fast reading on, shall we say, on a computer, a screen. And also, when you are being interviewed, you do obey the rules, which is you've got to tie the whole thing up and get your point across in 2 minutes. There can then be another question and another follow-up. But some people start sputtering it out, And at the 2 minute mark, they're only, they've only got a quarter of the way through of what they want to say. But you're very, very good at it. So I'm afraid this shutting down of it is quite disgraceful. And any decent minded American and any decent minded Brit should be utterly ashamed of what is going on. And they don't even now justify it by making any allegations. It is straightforward. Oh, America says that we must do it, and therefore we must do it. And the American position is an absolute outrage. It is a suppression of free speech. Now, Steve, if now I can now turn to the next subject.
Oh, indeed. I do want to thank you, Rod. And I must say, when I see you come on in Press TV, I dropped everything, and you have my absolute rapt attention. And
yes,
I certainly don't say that about a lot of other people who come on, although generally the people that Press TV brings on are just marvelous. They make comments. Some guests are better than others, but everybody speaks freely. And as you said, I am never directed on what I should say and what I shouldn't say. I speak my mind freely. I do it every time, and they keep inviting me back.
Yes, you said some people are better than others. Now, the thing about Press TV is it's built itself up over four or five years so that it now gets an extraordinary range of let's say erudite but knowledgeable, informed commentators and critique. And yes, some of them do go below standard, and they go below standard very often on the language problem. Is that they're very, very good in their own field, but this is an English channel. And, you know, that can create a problem. You and I are privileged in that so much of the world media today, of course, is in English. But that said, Press TV undoubtedly is continuing to make huge progress, as also Russia today. The Russian political position can waver a bit one way or the other, and it can be following just its only narrow perceived and narrow interest. But Russia today is also a breath of fresh air. Now, Steve, the big subject. This subject is so big, and then the implications are so horrific, that on the one hand, you can start anywhere and immediately get into the center of it. On the other hand, one doesn't know where to start. And I'm going to start by putting out a point, which I, with your permission, I will come back to time and time again. It is this. It's no good saying, oh, yes, everybody is being spied on. But what does it matter? If you've got nothing to hide, then why should you worry? I mean, who cares? That is missing the point entirely. Suppose that you disagree in a teeny-weeny way with something that the government is doing. Then, by the situation, by the mechanisms which are now in place, they can identify you. And then, having identified you, all they can do is, in fact, they can control you and shut you up immediately. For example, you might suddenly find that your credit card or your money card, whatever you call it, your debt card or whatever, doesn't work. And you go out to the ATM and the money machine, and you find, goodness me, that you've no money. Or you suddenly find that something has been placed on a credit file, which is untrue, and it's going to take you 6 months to actually get out of it. Another example, Luke, I can't find the surname, but he's American, and he's is he? Because I've seen him in the UK. He's We Are Change. But suddenly, he found, and was purely by chance able to find it, that child pornography had been placed on his computer, and that if he had passed any sort of passport point where they had checked his computer, even though he had deleted the pornography, he would have, of course, been in possession of child pornography. Now, these are just little examples, and we could go on all day discussing the ways by which they could, in fact, get at anybody. But anybody who in any way the powers want who be or want to get at can now be got at. And that is why anybody who says, oh, who cares if they listen to my conversations, is a complete and absolute fool. As regard the extent of spying, you can be sure that in the UK we've had DCHQ at Cheltenham for goodness knows is it 12 years. We've had the Echelon program. I mean, who cares about PRISM? We've been spying on our public totally on telephone calls and emails and text messages for at least six years. And I can give you evidence of, in fact, events in my life, which actually go back to 1993. That's 20 years. But that's in respect of individual. I'm talking about the wholesale spying. And then when they wish to put the pressure on one individual, maybe they can blackmail him, but they don't have to blackmail today. They don't even have to bribe today. All they have to do is to start putting mysterious little happenings in your life, and in no time at all, you're spending all your energy, all your money, trying to correct a situation like a wrong entry on a credit file. So you see, the spying is a very, very serious matter. Now, see, I have a lot more to say, but I'll just stop there at the moment and let you come in.
Well, again, your comments are very, very important, Rodney. There's so much on my mind. I can't imagine where to jump in and begin, but I literally try to address as much as I can, including what's going on internally in America. I certainly don't ignore that. And there are just horrors going on with, I suspect, much more conflict coming in the Middle East. I'm very concerned about what may happen with Iran. It's got a new president being inaugurated on August 3rd, Hassan Rouhani. He looks like a very interesting man. I'd like to hear your comments on him. I wrote an article about him. His background is very, very interesting. He seems like a very, very a significant diplomat, politician, and he's also a scholar. He's written many books. He's a very interesting guy. You taken a close look at him?
Well, he was did a period of education. I think it was at Edinburgh University, and of course all the Scots are bragging about that. And with good reason, the Scots' education over the years has been of the highest possible quality. Rouhani is said to be a more liberal, and socially I think he is a more liberal. On respect of the nuclear policy, there cannot be any change in the fundamental Iranian policy, which is that they have a right for a nuclear program. But you notice what happened the very moment that he had been elected. I'll come back to the election in a minute. The very moment that he had been elected, what did the Americans do? They put on even more sanctions. In other words, they're not interested in negotiation, discussion, or the facts. They think that what idiots they are. They think that they can bully the Iranians into submission. Now, I'm going to tell you a few things about the Iranians. First of all, the younger generation are very even-tempered, and they just want to be friends with the West. And you see the frown, they say, but why can't we be friends? Why does this go on? They just simply do not understand that the Americans are simply going to bully and pressure, and the fact that Rouhani gets elected, believed to be a man in a different cast of mind and taking different political possession from Ahmadinejad, and immediately the Americans go and guarantee that there will be no change in the Iranian position, though there cannot be any change simply because the American position is that Iran has to shut down its nuclear program. As regards the Iranian election, all I can say is that when it comes to democratic demonstrations, first of all, my view is that the Egyptians have probably beaten everyone. Before that, the largest political demonstrations you will see in the world any time. Now, there's a percentage of the population that you can get out in a town and a city any time. I mean, if you can get 30% of them out, that's wonderful, extraordinary. I mean, people are ill, they're fatigued, they're at work, they've got problems. To get 30%, you're really doing very well. But the biggest percentage, Iran. And as the other one is Bahrain. So Those are the great political demonstrations. And the Americans don't realize that in Iran, they are completely and totally Iranian and so going to support their country. And that by bullying at them, by bullying the Iranians, you are changing nothing. You are just guaranteeing that the Iranians are going to do more independence. And they say, well, all right, you put sanctions on us. That means something else we'll have to make for ourselves. So there it is. And the Americans should have seen what the scale of the demonstrations and the revolution celebrations in February, amongst which I was privileged to be in the crowd. What an extraordinary crowd. And it wasn't one crowd. This crowd was a revolving crowd, which went on all day long. So nobody really knows how many millions were part of it. So, see, a great mistake in respect of Iran. Rouhani, since they bullied Rouhani from the word go, you will find that Rouhani has got no room to move. When you put your hands around somebody's throat, they either have to kick you in the ribs or in the groin to get out of it. But they cannot, in fact, concede anything, because they are being strangled. And make no bones about it, every aspect of American policy is to strangle Iran. Now, if I can come back now to my point, which is every aspect of American policy is designed to strangle everybody else, because this spying matter is not just a question, the UK has been spying for 400 years since the time of Queen Elizabeth. We're very, very good at it in the UK. It's not just a question of the old James Bond stuff, finding a bit here and finding a bit there. It is not about a legitimate finding out what the others are going to do in a negotiation or finding out what the government. It is about complete and utter total control of the whole of the population, and particularly your own population. The reason why the USA has been kept in a state of permanent fear is to justify what is in now a complete imposition of what we call electronic machinery, electronic devices and practices, which enable the government to control the actions of every single person in the population. Yes, they're controlling people in the USA by debt. They're doing the same to the young people in the UK. But the object ultimately is to control the population. Now, a few other points here. How dare the USA force down a plane controlling the Bolivian president? And do you know, Steve, that apparently there was electronic interference with the fuel gauge? There were actually two separate issues. On the one hand, there was the complete, at the behest or the order of the USA, there were France, Portugal, Italy, not the UK, but it would have done if necessary, saying you will not cross our airspace. And at the same time, there was something going wrong on the fuel gauge of that plane, which guaranteed that he would have to land, even if it wasn't being allowed to go across the airspace. At this moment, there's a headline, the White House has ordered a court not to release spying records. Well, to which I just say, if intelligent people haven't woken up to the fact that everything they do, they're spied on. Their Google searches are spied on. Their tweets are spied on. Their emails are spied on. This is not to say that they are all read, but it works differently. What happens is that when they want to shut somebody down, they press the search machine, the search engine, which goes into all the material, and it then selects out the material relating to the one person. So you see, you don't have to all the time keep looking at everybody. And this much, too much of it is absolutely impossible. It's that you, when you want to and you have a reason, then you can go in and get sufficient information to control that person. And if you can't do that, you now do have the mechanisms by which you can make sufficient electronic interference in their lives. And at the very least, what you will do, it's like, should we say, if you sack somebody, the next 6 months, year, or 2 years, they're spent stressed, totally trying to find a job, and all their activity and their sort of pride in themselves, etc., goes out the window as they just are obsessed, as they just try to survive. Once they identify you, they can do things and effectively smash you as an effective political opponent. So I don't want to hear anybody whoever they are, saying, oh, so what if they listen to my stupid telephone calls? That isn't the point. The point is that the mechanism of complete oppression of the population is already in existence.
It certainly is, Rodney, and I've made the point in so many articles, and I've repeated it on air. This massive spying, on the one hand, is unconstitutional. It violates international law. It violates other U.S. statute laws, and I make the point with a couple of exclamation points. This is the way police states operate. They simply spurn the law, their own law and international law. They do whatever they please. They go after their own people, and for Americans to take this lightly, I mean, there should be public rage on a daily basis about this. People don't realize that this is a symptom of freedom in America completely disappearing. It's done by lawless spying. It's done by police state laws on the books. Many police state laws. The Patriot Act was the first one post 9/11. There were others before 9/11. There was a Clinton-era Anti-Terrorism Act around 1996 or so. It wasn't mild, but it was by comparison mild to compare with the Patriot Act, with the Homeland Security Act, with numerous other acts, presidential executive orders, national security directives, presidential directives, memos, all kinds of things, military orders. I mean, this is the way police states operate. We're on the cusp in America of full-blown tyranny, and most people don't even realize it, and even those that have a hint, they worry more about nonsense, bread and circuses, than their own freedom, than their own welfare, than their own futures, than what happens to their children or their grandchildren. I rail about this all the time, Rodney. I simply can't stop, and but on the one hand, it kind of baffles me a little bit, but on the other hand, I can understand it, because America's media is so absolutely abysmal. I commented yesterday on air that while there was blood in the streets in Egypt, I checked America's cable TV channels, and they were covering a murder trial. A murder trial. I don't care whose murder trial it was, unless it was the president's or something. Even then, you got a major story going on in the Middle East. You've got other major stories going on in the region, and they absolutely blank them out. They don't say a word about them. They weren't just covering the murder trial. As far as I could tell, they were going wall to wall. I don't know when they began in the day, but they probably went throughout the day, maybe into prime time, when the revenue from commercials is too great, so they'll shift to regular program, which is complete nonsense anyway. But this is what Americans get, and it's their own fault because they tune in. And the way to put these people out of business is just tune them out. Tune them out, and they'll go out of business, which is exactly what should happen. They should listen to programs like this. They should watch Press TV. They should follow Progressive Radio Network. They should follow other legitimate news services, and they'll know what's going on, and they'll realize how greatly in danger they are. Anyway, Rodney, I get very upset about these things.
Well, just one quick point here is it's not just the USA and the UK. The French are always good at hypocrisy, the French. I mean, they do it such a stylish fashion. The French are completely spying on their own people and on everybody else. The only point about the French is that the American systems and the British systems allow sharing between the USA, the UK, and then the generally white English-speaking ones like Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. And then at a grade lower, you have the French and the Germans, etc., etc. So to the extent that they don't quite have the full access that, shall we say, we in the UK have. But the French are doing it to their own population, to do everybody else. And that when they stand up and say, isn't this all shocking, crocodile tears is barely the way to describe it. But in all of these cases, it is the scale of the situation is one, and then the ability to do something as a result of the information. I mean, traditional spying gets hold of a piece of information, and then a vast amount of resources, men or women, trading people, setting up meets, setting up false trails, and doing all sorts of things going on. But within the new situation, the technology is so efficient, and the ability to implement a consequence of finding out that information is so simple and so quick that we are in a totally new situation. It's a mixture of George Orwell's 1984 and Aldous Huxley's A Brave New World. Aldous Huxley, right in 1932, was getting things right, and when he revisited the subject in about 1965 in Brave New World Revisited, he basically said he'd got it right in 1932 and hadn't got any more to say. Well, in some respects, it's absolutely startling how incisive he was at the time, for example, in prophesying things like gene manipulation and the ability to do things with human sperm and ova and things. But the one who's really on it is George Orwell, 1984. We are moving into a police state, and they've got the means already to do it. And those who say it doesn't matter are fools.
Absolutely. War is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. I ran out of Orwell. I mean, that's the stuff that's going on today. We're out of time, Roddy. I wish we can continue. Oh, another marvelous hour. I look forward to getting you back. I'll get you rescheduled to come back soon, and I'll sign off, and I'll just remind listeners to tune in again tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Saturdays, of course, the same time, and Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.